is Pull Yourself Together with E. Shaver Booksellers.
Hello, I'm Jessica, a lifelong lover of books, wide-ranging reader, fan of obscure British literature, all things Douglas Adams, long sentences, music biographies, the Oxford comma, always up for travel, except during COVID, and of course, Jane Austen.
And I'm Melissa, an eclectic bibliophile and all-around nerd who also loves Jane Austen, comics, and cooking. Together, we run an independent bookstore in Savannah, Georgia. Each episode, we discuss the books we've been reading and recommend.
Hi! So, we're back.
We are indeed.
Yep, and it's close to Thanksgiving when we are
it
recording
is.
This.
Yes.
When you're hearing it, it will be after Thanksgiving, so hopefully you had a lovely Thanksgiving and things were not too stressful with your families.
Yes, I hope all of your Thanksgivings went very, very well. And
all of your Thanksgiving dreams came true.
Yes. Lots of turkey. No conflict.
Unless you're vegetarian and then lots of tofurkey.
Yes.
Or sides.
Yes. However it works out.
Yeah, however mm-hmm. it works out. Yeah, so we're starting to get into the crazy time at the shop. I mean, the crazy but good time. Like,
oh, yeah.
Holiday shopping is always fun. I mean, some people think it's stressful, but I think it's fun. Helping people find holiday gifts for other people is a good time.
And I like to wrap.
Yes, there's there will not be much in... Well, she likes to wrap in both ways.
But I'm better at present wrapping.
It's true. I've heard her
not
wrap
vocal
the
wrapping.
Other way, and it's not great.
No, it's not. No. It's not my calling.
Yes. It's good to know your limitations.
It is. Know thyself. That's
Indeed.
What I say. Okay, we digress.
Yeah. So, Jessica, what have you been reading recently?
Well, a lot of things.
All the things.
All the things. But I'm going to...
Okay, so if you hear weird sounds in the background, there's construction happening
next
near
door.
Us, and this is just where we are.
Yeah. So recently I've been reading Jane Austen, Writing Society and Politics by Tom Keimer. Do we think that's how we pronounce his name? K-E-Y-M-E-R.
Keimer.
Yes.
That's how I would
Keimer,
say it. But...
Yes. Well, at any rate, it was for our Jane Austen book club, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. Although there was not any, for me, particularly earth-shaking revelations, it was still, like, it's a great reading companion if you're reading Jane Austen to help you pull more out of the book. Like, if you're a Jane Austen fan and you've read the books a few times, but you're one of us who rereads them,
All the time.
This book, I think, is really helpful in making you see them in a slightly different way and maybe bringing out some of the nuances. He goes into a lot of what the books would. First, he talks about her narrative voice, which is interesting in the way he talks about it, because I hadn't really thought about her, the way she narrates her stories before.
Mm-hmm.
Which is different. And then he also talks about how groundbreaking she was at the time and an influence that she had on, you know, other writers, including Evelyn Waugh, who is one of your current favorites.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, I mean, Evelyn Waugh was British. And I feel like if you're British and you're writing after Jane Austen wrote, Jane Austen is going to be an influence on you in much the same way like Charles Dickens is probably
right.
an influence on every British writer. They just can't help themselves.
No. But he talked about it's I just hadn't really thought about the two in my mind, but he talks about their use of language and subtle wit and
mm-hmm.
sometimes not so subtle wit.
Oh, yeah.
And the way they paint their characters where you can still identify with them, but they also are ridiculous.
Yeah, for sure.
And I really appreciated all of that, and where the villains really stand out as, like, taking the time to point out the minutiae of what they're doing when it's very subtle evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not overarching world-taking-over evil.
Not it's, world domination.
No, it's not world domination. It's just the everyday meanness,
mm-hmm.
which I think they both bring out really well, but of course, Jane Austen. So he talks about all those kind of things, and he also puts things in historical context. And he spent more time on Northanger Abbey and Mansfield Park, And he puts them at the beginning of the book. And I think because he wants to make sure you're going to read that part and not skip it.
They're like, oh, nobody cares about Mansfield Park.
Yeah. And he brought out a lot of points about Mansfield Park and Northanger Abbey that now I want to go back and reread them with fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. So it's a very small book. It's actually a very pretty book too, but
it's pocket size and it's mm-hmm. done by Oxford University Press. So it's academic, but
it's not overly academic. Yeah. Like it is,
not inaccessibly academic.
Yes. It's not inaccessibly academic, but it does go deeper than some books. And I feel like his theories are very plausible and mm-hmm. make sense. Like we've read some very academic works on Jane Austen that just go way out in left field. And this one really, like he just knows his subject matter. Mm-hmm. And it made me want to almost like read the chapter and then read the book it's associated with. Mm-hmm. I think it would be a great reading companion mm-hmm. for Jane Austen. It would make a great Christmas present for any Jane Austenites. Mm-hmm. Austenites. Anyway, in your
Janeites?
Janeites.
Yeah, yes. That's what Rudyard Kipling called them. Janeites.
Janeites. On your Christmas list. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I would highly, highly recommend this book if you are a fan of Jane Austen. And it you really can pick it up and put it down. Very accessible, very well written, and enlightening.
Yeah, very good. So as you were talking, mm-hmm. I was trying to decide which book I was going to talk about first because I can go two different ways that will play off of things that you said. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go the obvious route and talk about Brideshead Revisited.
Okay.
So as if anybody that's been listening to this recently, like the episodes from this year, mm-hmm. you'll know that I'm reading through all of Evelyn Waugh's books in the order that they were published. And Brideshead Revisited just happened to fit the prompt for our reading challenge this month, which was read a classic you've never read before.
Perfect.
So I was like, two birds, one stone, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
So Brideshead Revisited, it's very different from every other Evelyn Waugh book that I've read to this point. I'm mm-hmm. curious to see after this point how his writing is and mm-hmm. if this signals sort of a little change in the way he does things. There is not really any satire in this book. There's a little bit of ridiculous, but it's just kind of a almost sort of a little twee thing with Sebastian. So
yeah.
So the story is you start with Charles Ryder, who is at the point when the book opens in the British military. It's the Second World War. His company is kind of moving to a new encampment to do training.
Mm-hmm.
And they show up at night, and he's not really sure where they are. They're setting up this camp. And then he realizes that they're on the grounds of an estate called Brideshead.
Yep.
And
Sorry, I just got chills. I just love this book.
Yeah, it's really good. So like his second in command is kind of telling him about this estate mm-hmm. where they are. And he was like, oh, I know I've been here before.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back in time and get his story about how he's been to Brideshead before and kind of his involvement with the family that owned the estate. But he was a student at Oxford and he was studying history, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And he becomes friends with a guy at Oxford named Sebastian Flight,
who is eccentric.
Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, so the word twee, mm-hmm. like, is Sebastian. Yeah. Like Sebastian carries around a teddy bear with him named Aloysius.
Everywhere he goes.
Sebastian is just sort of like enigmatic and people are drawn to him.
His room is where the parties happen.
Right. So he and Charles become friends and
they become very close friends.
Yes. So in the book, there's allusions to their relationship being more than friendship.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie version I watched of it, it is more than allusions.
Right.
It is very, very overt. And I do think that Evelyn Waugh is hinting at that.
Well, you have to think of the time that he's writing it. So he doesn't want his book to be censored.
Right.
He wants it to be widely read. But it's pretty obvious when you read the book what's going on.
And you have to understand that Sebastian comes from a very devoutly Catholic family.
Mm-hmm.
So he's sort of fighting against duty to his family, duty to religion, fighting with his identity. And so Sebastian becomes sort of this tragic figure in this book mm-hmm. because he takes to drinking to deal with his problems and deal with his relationship with his family, which is not good. And
it's kind of the classic scenario of being closeted mm-hmm. and bisexual or gay.
Yeah.
Because nobody will accept him. Being a Catholic, he's obviously already an outlier from the aristocracy, so they have to work even harder.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's disappointing his family because I think his mother says somewhere in the book, you can have that early love, but ultimately you need to marry someone and produce heirs.
Right. And so in his family is chock full of hypocrisy because his mother and father
yes.
live separated. They're still married, but his father lives in Italy with his Italian mistress.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot going on in this book. But basically the book is more about Charles and Charles's journey and coming of age story. And Charles is an artist.
But Charles wasn't born into this world. So
no,
he, I think, doesn't understand the lengths that these people will go to protect each other, their own,
their legacy, their position in society. Yeah. And so Evelyn Waugh is writing this book at the time when the aristocracy is in danger. It's estate taxes are mm-hmm. causing all these great estates to be sold off. It's the only word I can use to describe this book is just melancholy. It is just sad and somber and
romantic, though,
but in a sort of almost gothic sort of
dark
romantic. I would say that if you've read any of Evelyn Waugh's books published before this and you kind of think of him as being ridiculous and funny, that it would be interesting to give this one a try because it is such a different feeling. Although mm-hmm. he is dealing with a lot of the same
issues,
topics and things that he touches on in other books, he just does it in more of a funny, ridiculous way.
So do you feel like this is his book after the war?
Because
he wrote the other book during the war just to write something he wanted to. Now he's been through the war.
Right.
And he's probably a very different person than when he started out.
Oh, yeah. I would absolutely say this is his post-World War II book that, mm-hmm. He was getting out his feelings.
Yes. Yeah. But it's beautiful. It does fall into the canon of Catholic literature, but that should not make you in any way afraid of reading this book.
No,
it's not.
I mean, they talk about their religion and it's interesting because you see the religion from Charles's perspective and Charles is not religious. He's mm-hmm. he says agnostic, but when pressed atheist, like mm-hmm. he just doesn't even understand the whole thing or why they care so much about this, like,
or why they would behave in the ways that they do, which are obviously counter to their happiness
mm-hmm.
because of this strict reading of their religion.
Yeah. It's very, very good. But again, it is very sad and just melancholy.
But if you haven't read it, I really, please, if you like this kind of literature, this is one you should put on your list.
I think so. And I'm going to say this, and this may be an unpopular opinion. I did not enjoy the movie, even though Emma Thompson was in it, and I love her. Like, I don't think the movie did the story justice, because they change a lot of things mm-hmm. in the way they tell the story. They create this sort of relationship between Charles and Sebastian's sister that doesn't exist at the time that they're creating it. Like, they change a lot of stuff for the storytelling aspect of a movie, which I think undercuts the book a little bit.
Well, I enjoyed the movie. I actually was brought up with the, I think it was the late 70s, maybe.
There was one from the early 80s that's more of a mini series, but I did not watch that one. I watched the newer movie of it.
My parents and their generation were all deeply caught up in watching that, and they loved it. But it makes Sebastian, it's more lighthearted in areas. But I haven't watched it in years. But they're like, oh, that's Sebastian and his teddy bear. He's such a hoot. And like, yeah.
Or he's very sad.
He's very, very sad and acting out. Yeah. Yes.
Potato, potato.
Potato, potato. Go either way.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I don't have a good book to segue into that one. everything else I'm reading right now. So I just finished my book for Mystery Book Club. And this one was particularly murdery.
On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being very murdery.
This one would be a 9 or a 10.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's by Lane Fargo. They Never Learn is the name of the novel. And it is about a female serial killer. And it's told in a really interesting way, and I don't want to spoil it for y'all, but there is about 150 pages in, you're let in on the secret of how the story is being told. And all of a sudden you're like, oh, that's interesting.
Well, now people are going to be sitting there like waiting till they
Yep. And there's no real secret about who the killer is, because the killer is the person talking to you, narrating the story.
Sure.
And so there are two different timelines. There is timeline from Carly, who is a college student at a university kind of near Pittsburgh, but it remains unnamed. And Gorman University, actually, which I don't think is a real university.
I don't know. If it is or not, I don't
And she's being dropped off. This is her first year in school. She's a freshman. She meets her roommate, Allison. And Allison is all that. You know, she's beautiful. She's a sophomore. She's all. And so you think, oh, here we go with the sort of it girl.
Mm-hmm.
Not that story.
Okay.
So she comes from an abusive home. Her father is a little bit physically abusive, but very mentally abusive to her mom and herself, and tells her mother how to wear her hair, who she can talk to, won't let them have the lights on if he's not home for people trick-or-treating because he doesn't want other people seeing his girls, and like really creepy guy.
Yeah.
So she gets dropped off at college. She's delighted to be out of that situation.
I'm surprised he even let her go to college.
But sad that she's leaving her mother behind.
Yeah.
So she starts settling into campus. She's a writer. She makes friends with Allison. And that part of the story is going along, and you can tell that there's probably some. So the main theme of the book is men who have caused sexual trauma to women in some way, either by molesting, raping, all different ways, finally getting what the main character thinks is coming to them. So she,
I mean,
it's a really interesting, I'm looking forward to book group tonight because we haven't discussed this book and I want to see what people think about this. So the other main character is Scarlett.
Mm-hmm.
Scarlett is a professor at this university. She is on tenure track and she is very intense. She is not married. She is focused on her scholarship. And she kills people on the side.
Like you do.
Like you do. And mainly these men. And she makes it look like
different accidents, suicides, other things. She allows one a year to not draw suspicion to herself.
Sure.
But she's going to have to shut down for a minute because it, you know, it's a small town and there can only be so many suicides and murders that go on.
Sure. I mean, I like that she's thinking ahead and actually considering these things.
Oh, yeah. She is very methodical in her planning. It goes into the minutia of, like, how she pulls her hair back to make sure that there won't be any evidence left at the site.
That reminds me a little bit of the one that I read where the where was the food critic that ate pieces of the men that she killed, like a certain hunger. Because she is very methodical about that as well. I find that interesting.
Yeah, it's it was a dark book. I found it to be, you know, most murder mysteries are dark books, but some of them are a little more cozy. This one is not a cozy,
no,
at all. And but it has this psychological element to it, kind of like Mr. Ripley, where you're actually somehow don't really want them to get caught.
Well, okay, so you were telling me a little bit about this in the past couple of days that, like, when you've been reading it, and it was interesting because when you were talking about it yesterday, on my phone, it came up with a, like, as I was doom scrolling through Instagram, it came up with a statistic about how many women die every year from intimate partner violence. Yeah. And, like, I just was, I was like, you know, I mean, it's not okay, but at the same time, I almost kind of understand.
Right. Well, it is a feminist novel. There is several of the characters are bisexual, and it definitely is a feminist novel. And the question, yes, it is. So most of the men she targets, not most of them, all of them are men who have gotten away with this. Like, they have been called in and then they've gotten away with it. Like, the school has said, well, we don't have enough evidence, or, well, this was at a party, or, well, he's so young, or,
well, he's not going to be able to eat steak anymore.
He gets a little slap on the wrist and nothing else happens to them. And so although you can see it from both sides, morally, you know it's wrong, but she does paint a picture where you're like, And I was thinking about it, thinking, well, we read all these books about, you know, serial killers who kill women who are prostitutes or on the lower parts of society, and nobody thinks about that. But when I read this book about these college boys being killed, suddenly it worries me, and what is the difference?
Well, I think one of the big differences, and it's just because we're programmed to think this way, is just most murderers are not women.
Right.
And it's, I don't know. I mean, even as a woman reading that, it's not right.
Wait a second. And there's even a part in the book where one of the victims, I'll say, because I don't want to, again, it's a murder mystery, so I don't want to give away too much of it. But one of the victims is like, oh, you would never kill anybody, to her.
Yeah.
And she's like,
huh. Oh, oh, little boy.
Oh, you obviously don't know me.
Yeah.
So, it's twisty. It's a lot of fun. It's a very quick read. And I think there will be a lot to discuss with book groups. So if you're looking for a feminist murder mystery book, They Never Learn is a good one.
Okay.
All right.
Well, so it's sort of...
No.
Okay. So for our sci-fi and fantasy book club... this month, we read a book called How to Become the Dark Lord and Die Trying by Django Wexler. I think we all kind of universally really enjoyed this book because it was funny and didn't take itself seriously and just was kind of a refreshing change of escapist pace for the beginning of this month.
Yeah, well, that's good.
So it starts out with the main character. Her name is Davy, and She is from Earth, but she has somehow been pulled into this other world, and she's also stuck in basically a time loop, or almost sort of like a video game where you start again from a save point, right? Mm-hmm. So she gets pulled in. There's a wizard there. He tells her she's supposed to be the savior who is supposed to save them from the Dark Lord. And she is like, okay. So she goes off to try and do that. And then she dies and she restarts at the same point. So she keeps coming back at the same point. Yes.
Does she have memories of coming
back? Yes. Okay. She does have memories of all the previous lives. So she does learn from what she's done. So she does. She starts lasting longer and longer.
Okay.
And figuring out what she wants to do and develops relationships with people and then dies and has to restart all over again. And then they don't remember, but she does.
Okay.
So she's been doing this for a long freaking time. She's on life 270 something when the book starts. So like 1,000 years she's been doing this.
Okay. She might be over it by now.
Well, so when the book starts, she's like, you know what? Instead of trying to be the savior and save people from the Dark Lord, I'm going to be the Dark Lord. I'm going to try that way. So this book is about her journey to become the Dark Lord.
Okay.
And it takes a little time. She has to restart a few times before mm-hmm. things start going her way. But as anybody who is trying to become the Dark Lord will understand, you can't be a Dark Lord without minions and a horde. So she has to collect along her way a group of minions and
devout followers, if
right.
you will.
So she's amassing this army of followers, and it goes through sort of the everyday minutiae of how I need to feed and clothe this big group mm-hmm. of people that's coming with me. I need to train them. I need, like, it's very interesting. And there's the magical system in it is kind of neat. There's a it's called Thaumite, and mm-hmm. it's like a rock or kind of a mineral thing. That there's the group of sort of the like the, I don't remember what they refer to them as, but they're like the trolls and the goblins, mm-hmm. like all those sort of people. They actually
the non-human people.
Yeah, so the non-humans basically. Mm-hmm. So humans can use this as sort of a focus for magic. So okay. they have to be holding on to it and can use it to do spells.
Okay.
So the non-humans actually require it to reproduce and so they have to ingest it, and like they need that to actually continue to live, right?
Okay.
And so when they ingest it, it takes a minute for their bodies to process it, but it then will appear somewhere on their body, like they'll have like them across their forehead or on their chest mm-hmm. somewhere. And it does add to their physical characteristics, like if they take the like brown color, it makes them more hardy and like so they're able to fight more or whatever, but they do need it as like a biological thing to actually keep reproducing. So that I thought the magical system in it is interesting. And Davy, where she's not of the world, can do both things. She can use it to do magic, or she can ingest it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of interesting. I will say, this is the first book in a duology, and the second book isn't out yet, and he leaves you on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Well, that's
so
just
it's a little mean, mm-hmm. But it's a lot of fun. So if you're looking for something that's fantasy that doesn't take itself seriously, mm-hmm. there's tons of pop culture references to things on Earth because she has come from Earth mm-hmm. and like seemingly from our time on Earth. It's a lot of fun. I highly recommend it. So
maybe that would be a good one to listen to.
Tim listened to it. My husband listened mm-hmm. to it. The book has footnotes.
Mm-hmm.
So the way they do the footnotes in the audiobook is interesting. It's not mm-hmm. bad. It's effective because you mm-hmm. know when it's a footnote. But yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Well, when my listening palette, I guess, plate clears up.
Yeah.
I'll have to look at it.
How to Become the Dark Lord and Die Trying.
Yes. That sounds delightful. Well, I read something a little more serious recently because she came and gave a talk at our bookshop, which was fantastic. But this is Jasmine Graham's Sharks Don't Sink, Adventures of a Rogue Shark Scientist. And she gave a great talk.
She did. It was really good.
It was really good. And I thoroughly enjoyed this book, and I learned so much more about hammerheads, sawfish sharks, bonnet heads, which are a subspecies of hammerhead, and just the coastal ecosystem in general, and also
about the politics of academia.
Yeah, so it did kind of fit in nicely with They Never Learn.
sure.
Because I could... So Jasmine starts out in a traditional academic path to be a scientist. It's an unusual path for a black girl, a woman. There are not a lot of women in science, and there are not a lot of black or women of color in science. Mm-hmm. And so she ends up working on her PhD at Florida State and finally just finds herself completely burnt out and just can't deal with the drama of the tenure track academics anymore. She has a run-in with a professor who's not named, who's one of her supervisors, who actually takes some of her research and uses it in his paper and uses it incorrectly, and she feels completely unable to do anything about it. And so during COVID, she happens to be scrolling through, I guess it's now X, whatever it was, Twitter prior to that, and sees another black girl who's working with sharks. And she's like, I didn't know there were any other black girls working with sharks. And so she messages her and likes it. And then she finds out that there are actually a group of women working in science. And so she makes the connection, and they start this program called MISS, which is for women of color in science. And they actually get funding for it and now have conferences and teach people how they can work in science no matter who they are or what they are. Mm-hmm. And so it's just a fascinating story. And so one chapter is really about the sharks and the science, and the next chapter is more about following chapter will be more about her growing up, her relationship with her family, where she came from, how she got interested, and then her academic work. And then you'll go back to another chapter about sharks. Mm-hmm. And I thoroughly enjoyed it. I would read another book that had even more sharks in it. And, and she really was a very enthusiastic and inspirational speaker.
Like, yeah, she was great.
Yeah, she was great. So if you are into sharks or grew up on the coast and just want to know a little bit more about what's going on out there in the ocean, I highly recommend this book. And if you're interested in women in science and how you can be a scientist in a more non-traditional way, I also think that this is a great book for you to read.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I've never heard someone talking about sharks so enthusiastically before.
No.
Like, and I mean, like, and not in a like obnoxious way. Like, she just thinks they're really interesting and wants to share her knowledge.
Yeah, and she also had this interesting sort of dynamic she'd worked out where sharks are the misunderstand, sort of the people of color of the sea, and dolphins are the white frat boys. And dolphins get away with everything, and people are outraged if anything happens to a dolphin, but not at all if something happens to a shark. And
sure.
She talks about how sharks can be trained, that they're not just mindless killing machines, and all the really cool stuff about sharks. And really interesting. Whale sharks have dendrite on their eyeballs, which is fascinating.
And terrifying.
And terrifying. Well, whale sharks only eat plankton, so sure. Not quite as scary.
Uh-huh. That's what they want you to believe.
So.
All right.
Yes. I'm guessing Melissa's going to go on to something completely different.
Yeah, no sharks in what I was reading. I'm going to skip over the next one I was going to talk about because y'all are going to think that I don't read anything other than fantasy books, and that is not true.
It's not true.
So Jessica knows this. I have been reading, well, listening through Lucy Foley's books because I've been curious, and she sells a lot of books, and I want to know what's up with that. So I just listened to The Paris Apartment. And this is nothing against Lucy Foley and nothing against people that enjoy her books, because I can see how people enjoy them. I wasn't a huge fan of the first two that I listened to, The Hunting Party and The Guest List, because I thought they were too obvious. Like, I figured it out.
The Hunting Party, that was written years ago, wasn't it? I'm trying to think. When that book came out?
Not that long ago.
Okay. Maybe I'm thinking of it. I remember reading The Hunting Party, and I can't remember why. Anyway.
But she does sort of the same thing in each of her books. And it's a very typical thing in mystery books. It's sort of the lock room mystery where you put all these people together, their secrets underneath the surface, trying to figure out, like, you know, what's going on. So The Paris Apartment does that same thing, but it's centered around this apartment building, which becomes sort of a character in the book too, because you learn more about the building. So it starts with a girl who is British, and she's coming to visit her brother, Ben, who lives in this, he's a journalist and he lives in this building. She's talked to him on the phone and he said, he's there. Just when you get there, ring this bell. I'll let you in. She gets to the building. She rings the bell.
Nothing.
He doesn't answer. She's texting him, calling him, nothing. And, so it's basically, she's trying to find her brother who has essentially disappeared. And she's got sort of clues that she's picking up. Like, she listens to the last voicemail that he left her, and there's some sounds at the end of it before he hangs up the phone where someone has come into his apartment. And so it's the sort of the all the people that live in the building all seem like they have secrets. I will say the twist in this one, I did not actually figure out. And that's why I think I liked this one as opposed to the other two, because this one I was like, oh,
yeah.
and there's more to this story than just like people who don't get along, you know? So that I appreciated that one. So I'm curious then to read her newest book that just came out this year, The Midnight Feast, because I think her writing has gotten a lot better. I think she's definitely kind of grown into it. So I'm interested now.
Well, I want to know what you think, because I need to make my book list for next year for Mystery Book Club.
I would say The Paris Apartment is a good one. Okay. I would put that on there.
I think we'll put that on there then.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk about something completely different that I'm listening to, and it's going to take me a while to finish because it is not a short book. It's 25 hours and 32 minutes.
And of nonfiction, too.
Of nonfiction, yeah. So, but I'm listening to about 20 or 30 minutes of it a night. So, you know, by New Year's, I might be done with it. But it is about Mondrian. The artist, Pete Mondrian, who...
I never knew his first name. Like, it is like Pete.
I know. Well, it's spelled...
Bob Mondrian.
It's spelled in a different way.
I know, I get that. It just is not what I expected.
But it is Pete Mondrian. Yes, I know. And, you know, I've liked his art over the years, and he was one of the first modern artists that I was exposed to when I was in high school. And I was just fascinated by that whole group of artists. And he was in Paris with Picasso and Gauguin and da, da, da. So when this came up on my Penguin Random House, you know, reading, listening app, I was like, oh, and I just became fascinated with it. So he grows up in a household which is interesting. They're Dutch, and his father, they live in the Netherlands, and his father is a schoolmaster, and he starts a school, and it's for Orthodox Protestants, which I... Like,
that's a thing?
It's a thing.
Okay.
It's a thing.
And I'm not familiar with the Orthodox Protestant.
If you're familiar with the Pilgrims, you actually are familiar with, because the Pilgrims are the ones who, they sailed off.
Okay.
They're the ones who were involved in this. And so...
So, you know, not a lot of witches.
Fun. Yeah. But weirdly, they have room for the arts.
Yeah, so that doesn't seem like that would fit with their...
His father is a drawing master and painter as well, but also runs the school because he has to do something serious to earn a living. Mm. And so Pete grows up... Pete, it is still weird to call him that.
It's very strange.
I know. He grows up in this household that is very religiously strict, and ultimately the first school closes down because the government decides that they don't want this religious of a school to be government subsidized anymore. So they end up moving to more of a border town that's further out. But it's an idyllic countryside town, and he has a relatively happy childhood and is quiet. And he has an uncle who lives in the city and who is an artist. And so his uncle starts giving him lessons, and it's obvious that he has a talent for drawing. And so when it comes time for his family, he's like, well, I want to be an artist. And they're like, sure, but you need something else you can actually do. you know. Sure. And so they make him go to school and pass his drawing master's test. And then he ends up in Amsterdam at The Hague and for his higher education. And then, it's just... So far, I'm in the beginning of before he's really gone to Paris and delved into the modernist that he becomes. So right now, he's working on landscapes and commissioned portraits and other things and kind of struggling as an artist. And so I'm really excited about getting... I know more about him now than I ever thought I would, and I find his life interesting. He's deeply into ballroom dancing.
I mean, who could blame him?
Yeah, and that happens later on. But he also lives a very particular, very kind of isolated life as well. Mm-hmm. So he's I think the depths of his strangeness and talent are going to be revealed in this book. But it is not
sure
for the light of heart. It is fun, though, to go back. Since I'm listening to it, I don't have the book in front of me that has pictures in it. And so I've been going back and looking at his early work. And it is always fascinating to me when you take someone like Picasso and you look at all of their early traditional work where they are grounded and learn basic skills. And then they go into the abstract and you realize what great artists they are.
Yeah. My husband always jokes. He's like, oh, they can actually draw.
Well, it's when people are like, oh, I could do that. Well, no, if you look at the training they've actually had and what they can do, they have a point to what they're doing. It's not just...
Well, it's always things in context, right? Because it's like... I don't remember... who the artist was, but it was basically like a white canvas painted white.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, well, it's like, but when you actually read the context of it and what the artist is trying to accomplish with it, while it's not my favorite piece of art, I at least understand it.
Right. Or can appreciate what they were trying to do.
Yeah.
And I actually like his modern art. It's very geometrical.
Yes, it is.
But it has a soft spot in my heart because it was kind of my first introduction into the modernist movement. And
anyway,
I would definitely recommend this if you are in any way interested in modern art and Mondrian. It's an interesting story. Again, it's not for the faint of heart. It's a tome, but but it is interesting. And the biographer is obviously fond of the subject, which is nice because sometimes when you're reading a biography, you get about halfway through and you realize they've lost interest. And
yeah,
this one does not seem to be that way at all.
You're not halfway through yet.
Oh, that's true. But I don't think you will.
All right. So anyway, my last one that I was going to talk about is something completely different. So I am a big fan of Jim Butcher's Dresden Files series.
Yes.
I like them a lot. I mean, the way he talks about women is a little, you know, whatever, male writing, urban fantasy. But his son started writing a series, and it's really hard to read his son's work without comparing it to his dad's, because it's very similar what he's doing. It's urban fantasy as well. The cover, even of the one that I'm like, that I read, looks like a cover of the Dresden Files book. So my husband and I have a little book club of our own where we each pick a book and we read it together and then talk about it. And I picked this one. It's called Dead Man's Hand, and it's James J. Butcher. He didn't realize until I said that it was his son's book that it wasn't Jim Butcher writing it, because he just thought it was a new series that he was writing. So if you're familiar with the Dresden Files, there's Harry Dresden, who is sort of a loner wizard who lives in Chicago and solves crimes. So in this one, we've got Grimsby, who's sort of a loner witch in Boston. Who gets pulled into solving a crime. So, you know, a little similar. I will say that I think it's the beginning of a series. I'm curious to see where the next one goes. I'm hoping he will branch out and kind of do something a little different from what his dad is doing.
But it didn't disappoint.
No, it didn't disappoint me. I was entertained. It was just really hard to read it and not be like, oh, well, this is like this, and this is like this, and this is like this. But honestly, if you think about it, if anyone has read any urban fantasy, there's a lot of similarities between all of them. Like, I love Kim Harrison's Hollows books, but those are also, it's set in Cincinnati. There's a witch who solves supernatural crimes.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, they're all kind of doing the same. Well, it's very tropey.
Yes, like, that's what I was going to say. Like, it's a trope.
Yeah. But I like Grimsby, who is his main character. He is, he had been in school to be an auditor, which is basically their sort of magical police force, and he ended up failing out. And the person, the witch who wrote sort of the, like, this person cannot be, you know, ends up dead.
Okay.
And she has left a message written in, like, this obscure language that when translated says kill Grimsby. Okay. And so he gets pulled into it by nothing that he's done. And he's funny, and he's just sort of awkward, and
he's that kind of people.
Yeah. Like, he works at basically, the magical version of Chuck E. Cheese, and is like the guy that is doing kids' birthday parties. and like the way Grimsby does magic is different than what his dad talks about. Like, his magical system is a little bit different. So there are things there that I think once developed could be interesting. So I'm curious to read the next one. It's, the series is called The Unorthodox Chronicles.
Nice.
But the first one is Dead Man's Hand.
Okay.
So what are you reading right now? So you are listening to the Mondrian.
I am listening to the Mondrian book, and I just finished another book. So I am listening to Gulliver's Travels for our
To Kill a Mockingbird
book group. And honestly, I think I read it in high school. And I've seen the movies so much that it's all confused in my mind. So this is like the first time I'm reading it.
Yeah. My guess is that if you read it in high school, that you probably only read the first part of it with the Lilliputians.
Yeah.
Because I don't think it's the whole thing is ever assigned.
No. And so
it's like you read that and then you read A Modest Proposal.
Right. And then you're done with that.
Yeah.
And so, so yes, it is like a complete, it's nothing like I remembered it. So I'm enjoying it. And boy, is he, satirical and he cuts deep, but it's
but it's also like 200 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. And the way he writes it, there's not dialogue. It's like he's just
telling you. It's kind of a, well, not really dialogue. I'm squeaking there when I'm he is narrating the entire tale.
Well, like, so Tim and I just read like for Halloween, like out loud, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow. And it's the same sort of writing where none of that story
is... I did this, I did that.
Yeah, there's no interaction between the characters, like, directly.
Well, the king does come to see him, you know, and they have dialogue, but he tells the dialogue.
It's, but it's not... It's not as dialogue. No, it's just him relaying the information.
And he relays a lot of everyday details that... Yeah, like real, like where he goes to the bathroom and how he relieves himself and what he's got in his pockets.
And that was my problem with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, too. Like, I was like, oh my God, Washington Irving, just enough.
So I'm going to say that this is my classic that I haven't read because, I've not read the whole thing. But the next book I'm going to read is Stoneyard Devotional by Charlotte Wood, because one of our book reps sent it to us and said, please read. And when Diane asked me to read something, I usually do. And it comes out in February. And I'm not sure what it's about yet, but it sounds intriguing. Okay. A burnt out and in need of retreat, a middle-aged woman leaves Sydney to return to the place where she grew up, taking refuge in a small religious community hidden away on the stark plains of rural Australia.
Okay.
So that's where I'm going next in my book journey.
All right.
And then, okay, go ahead.
Well, what about you? We finished The Fellowship of the Ring in our read aloud, my husband and I. So we have dived into the Two Towers.
Okay.
And we are right at Helm's Deep.
Oh, yeah. That goes on longer than it makes me comfortable for.
15 pages.
Oh, that's it?
That's it.
It seems like all eternity.
I know.
Yeah, because it's so fraught.
Yes. So we're there. Mm-hmm. I am listening to, on my way to and from work, The Future by Naomi Alderman.
Oh, yeah. I have wanted to.
It's good. It's a little close to home, honestly. Okay. So it is basically three tech billionaires who own things like Microsoft, Twitter, Facebook, those kind of things, are essentially prepping for the end of the world, like a doomsday situation happening. And they have this like escape plan that they've got figured out. And they're going to go to this bunker where they're going to be fine. And the people that they pick are going to be okay. And somehow they've got advanced knowledge of when these things are going to happen. And so it's like them getting ready to go. And then you've got this other cast of characters where you've got these kind of survivalist people who are on the active on these like, message boards for so like, there's
I'm rolling my eyes,
but there's a lot going on. It's really interesting and it is very,
close to home,
very close to home. And then I am reading, it's called The Anomaly by Hervé Letellier. It's older. It won a prize in 2020, and it's sort of like a mashup of speculative fiction, sci-fi, thriller kind of thing. But it's funny because it won the Prix Goncourt, which one of the books that I just read won it this year. And so I was looking into this prize a little bit. So it's a French literary prize. It's been around for a long time. Like, Proust won it, Simone de Beauvoir won it, you know,
so some big names.
Yeah. But the prize itself, they win 10 euros. Like, it's just like a little thing, but the by winning the prize, their sales skyrocket. Right. And so like they sell like millions of copies of books, especially like for French sales, like mm-hmm. millions of copies of books are huge. Just reading two of them sort of back to back is interesting. But this one's weird. Like, mm-hmm. so it follows different people. And the only connection they have so far is that they've all been on a flight that has had like an extreme amount of turbulence, but they haven't interacted with each other on the flight. And it sort of just talks about, and I'm curious where it's going, but,
interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So our December reading challenge, mm-hmm. The prompt for that is read a book that was published in the year you were born.
So I actually have come up with a book I want to read for that. It is The Mangus. And it's by John Fowles. He wrote The French Lieutenant's Women.
Yeah.
And it came out in 1965 when I was born.
Yeah. So I was looking and in 1975 or 79, some great books were published, like Hitchhiker's Guide.
Oh my gosh.
Flowers in the Attic.
I know. Well, Dune was published in 1960. So weird banner years for literature.
Yeah. But I think the one I'm going to go with, I'm going to reread The Neverending Story, which is one of my favorite books. Yeah. And I haven't read it in a really long time, but it was published in 1979. So I'm going to read that.
Yeah. I'm actually excited about The Mangus. It's one of the ones I've always wanted to read and haven't read.
Well, see, now you have a reason.
Absolutely. All right.
All right. Well, again, I hope you all have had a lovely Thanksgiving and
good luck in the holiday season. And we look forward to talking to you on the other side of that.
Yeah. All right.
Bye.
Bye.